episode of the most awesomeness movie podcast there is, at least.
Hell yeah.
The Rebel Radio podcast. How's it going, Matt?
What's up? Going good, man. Can't wait to, there's a movie hitting theaters this week. I can't wait to see it. And I just hope that there's tons of cool shit in it like we always see.
Yeah, I'm hoping to see it Saturday. I haven't bought tickets yet because I'm kind of waiting to see if we will have baseball practice or anything like that. I have to work around.
But, oh, yeah.
I should know tomorrow night after our baseball game tomorrow night. I'll know if we're having practice Saturday or not. And then I'll go from there and figure out when I'm going to go see it. Other than that, man, I'm doing okay. I had to go back to work, which is always sometimes miserable and sometimes okay.
It's a chore. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a chore. It's like, God dang, I gotta work. And then you get the question, like 25 people asking you, how was your vacation? I'm like, yeah, it was fucking great because I wasn't here. You know, then I saw your face and you just ruined it all.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, you know, you just don't get the same effect. Whenever you're at home and you're not at work, you know, your children smiling, it brings joy, a certain joy to your life that, you know, turning, you know, looking over your shoulder and seeing your greasy coworker's face that works in the dairy department, right, and the light shining off of his head, you know, seeing him smile, this doesn't bring you the same kind of joy.
We got this, we got this dude, and I can say this cause he's never going to listen to the show. He's like 73 years old and he complains a lot. And just complains. And he's also going to be very nice. But I'm just like, sometimes I have to walk away from him. Like, dude, I just don't want to fucking hear this today. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm glad that you're miserable. You're 73. And you're having to still fucking work. But you know what? I don't care. It's like, you know, it's like, some things like that, you know?
Yeah, man. Those kinds of
any
people.
Of my coworkers that might happen to hear this episode, I love y'all. In my own way.
In my own way.
But other than that, man, I did end my vacation after our last recording by I took the kids to see Shazam, Fury of the Gods. And, critics have been kind of harsh to this film, and I'm really starting to think that critics are getting a bit of a superhero fatigue because I'm like, I watched the movie and I'm like, it's not, don't get me wrong, it's not the best superhero movie, but it's perfectly fine. It's entertaining. It's a good family movie. I was really struggling to like why critics hated on it so much.
Yeah.
I'm like, it didn't really do anything differently than the first one did. And they liked the first one, and this one, they just sort of shat all over it. You know, it's like, and I'm really starting to wonder if even critics are getting superhero fatigued and kind of jaded that the DC expanding universe is no longer going to exist after the Flash. Which I'm still trying to figure out how Aquaman's going to play into that since it takes place after. But that's a whole other thought there.
Did you see the reports that came out in February that apparently test screeners walked out of Aquaman 2?
Yeah, but I don't read too much of that because a lot of test screens have been bad over the years.
Apparently, you know? They talked to Jason Momoa about this, and he said something about how it's like akin to a quest for peace kind of thing. Well, instead of nuclear weapons, it's about like waste in the ocean. And I hope we're not getting a film about Aquaman saying, we've got to protect the ocean from those six-pack rings. The cans come in. The fish are getting stuck in them. You know, I hope that's not what he's battling. So I hope it's not like diplomacy and stuff like that. I'm pretty sure it's not. No. But I'm like, you know, I hate seeing, you know, reports like that. So, hopefully that's not the case.
Too much into test screenings because sometimes test screenings aren't always the go-to thing to go by. Plus, you know, I would think that James Wan and Jason Momoa at this time have made enough films. I don't think they're going to make something absolutely horrible, you know?
Yeah.
I got to have some faith in the creators behind the product. So we'll see. But back to Shazam, man, I am. It was fun, man. I liked it. I enjoyed it. It had some cool monsters in it. It had some cool story. You know, it had a pretty simplistic story, but it was well done. Got to see more from the Shazam family. I do think that the Shazam movies kind of lacked ever having Black Adam in them, you know, because he is one of his main villains.
Yeah.
And I also felt like in the comics, Billy eventually gets a little smarter, more adult. But yet they continue to have him just kind of be stupid throughout this movie. And I felt like you didn't advance his character much, you know, in that aspect.
Yeah.
You know? other than that, man, it was fine. I enjoyed it. It was the kids liked it. You know, they really enjoyed it. And I don't understand the harsh criticism that it's getting, because it really isn't a bad movie at all. The cast shows up for it. They do a good job. They all give it their all. And Zachary Levi, who I didn't care for a whole lot in the first movie as Shazam, does grow on me more, even though I wish they would have done more with his character. I think he does a good job in this one. There's a cool cameo at the end of the film, which has been spoiled on TV commercials. And yeah. It's not forced, like people said. It was fine. You know, it makes sense. It makes a little less sense because the universe is going away, I guess you could say. But the cameo is fine. You know, it works for the story. And there's no other way, the way they wrote the end of the story, that you could have done it without her appearing. So it's kind of like, kind of had to do it, you know.
Yeah. And,
it was cool, man.
And it's got Lucy Liu in there.
Yeah. It was, yeah, complaining about her career sucked because she wasn't superheroes earlier. I'm getting a little tired of these celebrities complaining about how their careers turned out because they did this or that. Like, you know what? Hire a better agent.
Yeah. Get a better agent.
But no, Shazam Fury of the Gods, it was fun. You know, I mean, I'm not going to trash it at all. I mean, I enjoyed it. You know, it was cool. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe people will go see it. Maybe they probably won't go see it with John Wick Part 4 coming out this weekend. I'm sure it's going to tear up the box office, but then Dungeons and Dragons after that. So Shazam's probably doomed to not make the money they wanted to make. But at this point, whatever, with the DCU, I guess, you know.
Yeah, it's just too much going on there for, you know, people don't want to put investment in something that's not going to advance the universe, I think. And I think you probably feel the same way.
Yeah.
It's just weird. You know, it's kind of like whenever, I forget if New Mutants ever made it out to theaters.
It did briefly.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it didn't do too well because it's like, you know, it was a Fox franchise. Fox got bought out. They knew that, you know, mutants weren't going to go any further. So, you know, why put stock in it?
Even though I never watched it.
It's not that great.
No.
It's okay. You've got some cool characters in there. I just don't think it's used. They're used as well as they probably should be, and it's just a weird storyline.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think. But I do feel like if they market the Flash right and really market it around Keaton's and Affleck's Batmans and try to keep Ezra's person in a good light, I think that the Flash will be successful.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of internet backlash on the Flash because of Ezra Miller and the person he is or has been the last year or two. And hopefully that backlash doesn't lead to the movie failing, though, because I do want it to be successful because it looks fucking awesome.
Yeah.
They showed the trailer on the big screen in front of Shazam, and I was like, wow, this looks freaking epic, you know?
And, it does.
Tom Cruise apparently asked for early screening of it, and he gave it high praise. So, you know.
Hey man, there you go.
If my boy Tom prays the Flash, I'm down.
That's right, man. That's funny. You know, you mentioned Tom Cruise. It's like, you know, these action movies that keep getting made. I feel like it's Keaton, it's Keanu and Cruise. Just like, you know, who can be like the better late 50s action star just between them, you know?
They're keeping the action genre alive, you know.
That's right, man.
And then even the next level guys are in their, you know, early 40s, you know, Daniel Craig and those guys and Vin Diesel that have done the Fast and Furious movies. They're not young either. So who is going to be the next young act? The Rock is what, 51 now?
Yeah, man. You
know? So it's like, he's getting who is up the there. Next young action stars are going to keep the action genre alive? You know, I mean, you know, who knows? Someone
who knows,
will come,
man.
Someone will rise from the ashes of the great action stars.
Or we'll just keep de-aging people and put Harrison Ford back out there for more indie movies.
Yeah, right. And that's really all I watched this week other than this week's episode of The Mandalorian.
Same here. I pretty much just watched Mandalorian. I will say that you know, I was looking at what Comicpalooza was releasing for their guest, and I think I'm finally going to get I've never gotten anything autographed except for Eliza Dushku's photograph. And that was understandable. She was like, you know, teen heartthrob growing up for me. And, you know, it was cool having her there. But I've never had anything from a horror franchise signed. He's doing autographs for $40, and I found a 25th anniversary Ghostface Scream mask on eBay for sale, and I want it, and it's brand new. And I think I'm going to have him sign it, that way I have a horror franchise item kind of signed by him. Find a way to put it up somehow, I guess. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm unimpressed so far. Accomplished.
It's got room to be better. I'd like to see some more voice actors. Maybe some more DBZ or My Hero Academia people.
I have been watching. I've been going back and watching. Think about voice acting. I've been going back and watching the animated Spawn from the 90s.
Okay.
Which is really good, actually. But you know, only lasted three seasons because it was expensive to make. I think it was way ahead of its time. You know, adult animation in the 90s just wasn't, you know.
Now, you can do that now.
Home premium cable wasn't a thing yet. You know, yeah, I mean, if you put out like Spawn now, it'd be incredible. I've been watching that. I'm into the second season now. And man, I like it quite a bit. I think it's pretty good. You know. They're like 22-minute episodes. They're not overly long. And I mean, I've seen it all before, but it's been some years since I've watched it. I've been rewatching that on HBO Max. And it's funny because I have the DVDs, but it's just easier to watch it streaming, you know. And
yeah,
it's pretty solid. But yeah, man, The Mandalorian, man. Okay, this week's episode, I will first off say this is more like it after last week's arguably boring episode, you know, with the scientists and all that. We get to see more about how the Mandalorians and their convert works, you know, as we see them doing some training with some younglings and or foundlings, I guess you should say.
Yeah.
And we get to see one of them match up with Grogu in a paintball battle.
And, yeah, paint a little paintball.
And Grogu comes through with some ass kicking abilities, and man, can they just make Grogu any more ridiculously cute? You know, it's just like
for real, man.
In the training, one of the foundlings gets captured. Turns out it's Paz Vizsla's son, and so Bo-Katan comes up with a plan to rescue him. And in the meantime, Grogu is begins Mandalorian training basically by being accepted into the convert himself, and gets his first piece of armor through the armor, which we get a really cool flashback sequence, which was the highlight of the episode, I think, where the armor tells Grogu that, you know, it can also, you can see your fears through this. And Grogu is remembering from when he was in the temple during Order 66. And he is rescued by a Jedi played by Ahmed Best, who is best known for playing Jar Jar Binks. And I thought that
Misa
was awesome.
Jar Jar Binks, Misa save you now.
But I think it's awesome, man. I think because that guy, Ahmed Best, loved being in Star Wars. He loved it, man. He embraced it. He visited children. And then he got nothing but flack from people on the internet that almost to the point where he wanted to kill himself. And it's sad that people did that because here's a guy who was just a big kid himself and was so happy to be cast in Star Wars. And it was ruined for him by a asshole portion of the fan base that just treated him like shit over playing a kid character, you know, basically. And so it's cool to see him come in and get some redemption, man, and be a Jedi. And he saves Grogu from Order 66 and gets him to safety. And it was a really cool moment seeing him get to kick some ass with some lightsabers and rescue Grogu and we'll get a little bit of a look into what Grogu's life was before where we're at now in The Mandalorian. And I thought it was really sweet. And then the episode concludes with Bo-Katan and her rescue unit as they rescue Paz's son and fight this giant raptor monster. And she loses a piece of armor in the process. She's talking to armor as she gets it replaced, and she tells armor that she saw the mythical mythosaur. Yeah, and the armor doesn't say whether she believes it or not, but just says this is the way. There were lots of this is the ways in this episode.
Yes,
kind of a short episode, but it didn't feel short. It felt like because there was so much going on, a lot of action in this episode. I felt it's interesting because we thought that this season was going to be about Mando redeeming himself and bathing in the waters of Mandalore. And it's completely taken a different turn now.
Yeah. Now that's already happened. Now we're moving on to other stuff, which is cool. I will say that, you know, it sucks the fan base treated Ahmed like that. But in their defense, it was Jar Jar's fault that Senator Palpatine got the emergency powers needed to take control of the Senate and basically be a dictator. You know,
that's a character. That's not a person.
it led to I am the Senate.
Yeah, don't do my boy Ahmed like that, man.
It was pretty cool though, man. He was deflecting blaster shots like crazy, man. He got the two lightsaber action going, and you know, he was pretty good, man. I had to do a double take. I was like, man, he looks familiar. And so sure enough, you know, I you know, looked on the internet and they're like, Jar Jar Binks redeemed. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I thought it was cool, man, because it would have been too cliche, I think. You already had the major rescue with Luke rescuing Grogu. I think if you had opened that door and it had been someone like Plo Koon or somebody we recognize, it would have been just like, nah, that's too, you know, predictable. That was cool. That was just a random Jedi face, you know?
Yeah. Well, Plo Koon, he crashed. He was shot down, you know, in Order 66.
Yeah.
Maybe Kit Fisto.
No, Fisto was already dead at this point. Remember?
Oh, from they the Senate.
Into the Senate room and
that's right.
Sidious takes them all out real quick. You know?
Man, would have had to come up with another Jedi, I guess.
Yeah. So it worked out, you know, for a random Jedi. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
But overall, man, just an exciting, fun episode, man. That's what we watched Mando for. And, you know, last week's episode, I'm sure it'll play towards something eventually. But, you know, I just hate to say that's not what I tune in for Mando for. You know, I tune in for action and Star Wars adventure. And there's nothing wrong with the style that Andor took, you know, which is how I felt about last week's episode. But that's just not what I'm expecting out of the Mandalorian.
Yeah.
You know? And it was okay. And I noticed across the internet in the last week that last week's episode, a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people found it kind of slow and boring. People want the action. They want the adventure that we're expected to get from the Mandalorian from week to week, you know?
I don't think they should have spent a whole lot of time on it, but I do think it's interesting that doctor's degree of expertise was cloning organs, and then specifically cloning by taking two hosts and combining them into one. So it's like, who are they trying to clone with Grogu?
Well, there's already been rumors that Mandalorian is sowing the seed, so to speak. Did I say that right? Towards the creation of Snoke.
Oh.
There's already been rumors of that because Favreau and them have dropped hints that they look at their universe as expanding from Return of Jedi all the way up to The Force Awakens. Now, Favreau did say that doesn't mean we're going to tell you 30 years of stories, but our stories will connect from the original trilogy to the new trilogy. He has kind of said that. So that's been rumors that, you know, are they sowing the seeds of the creation of Snoke?
That makes sense.
Some of these things. So it could happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, because right now they said they plan on Mando being at least 5 seasons, if not longer. You know, from what Favreau has said, they've got, you know, storylines planned out for at least through 5 years, but it could go longer. So, you know.
Nice.
I mean, he's already writing season 4, you know.
Oh, yeah. They want to go past that. So. 5? That's nice. Yeah. I would like 5.
Yeah. I mean, I would take as much as they give me with Star Wars.
Heck yeah, man. Especially the style that Mandalorian is in. Yeah. I mean, they almost knock it out of the park every season.
We just need to keep Pedro Pascal healthy and alive so he can continue to play Din Djarin and Joel.
Make sure he doesn't get like allergies or strep throat.
Protect that man at all costs.
Yeah. Strep throat may make him sound cooler. Maybe a raspier Din Djarin.
Well, did you notice in this week's episode that there was something he says to Grogu, like good job, kid, or something. He kind of dropped his own voice there instead of doing the Mando voice for a brief moment. I wonder if that was done on purpose. But there is a moment where I noticed like, whoa, Pedro's actual voice came out instead of his Mando voice.
I think, in this episode. Yeah, I think I noticed that as well, where it was like a little lighter. Wasn't as you know, gristly as it normally is. That's the word.
But the Mando man continues. The Mandalorian continues to be badass Star Wars stuff.
What's it leading up to? We'll find out.
I have no idea, but we'll find out one day. Man, so we're recording a little earlier in the week, so we don't have a whole lot of news to talk about. We do have a little bit. The Daniels directors, or the directors known as the Daniels from directed Everything Ever All at Once, coming off their super hot Oscar clinching wins of Best Director, yeah, Best Picture, and all that. And they are going to – word came out they were directing a Star Wars movie. Well, it's not true. But they are directing an episode of The Skeleton Crew, the new Star Wars series that's coming later this year with Jude Law. So they clarified that, like, hey, we're just doing one episode, and we'll see where it goes from there. So I guess they're not ruling out working for Lucasfilm further on, but right now they're going to do an episode of The Skeleton Crew. Don't know much about the show, and it's done by Jude Law, and Favreau and Filoni have mentioned that it's a little bit more kid-friendly Star Wars, so we'll see. I guess it's a ragtag crew, and I believe it takes place, though, in the same time frame as Mandalorian. I think it's after Return of the Jedi, so...
Yeah, I think so.
So the Daniels,
that's awesome, man. I hopefully they get more work because I think they could be very good.
Yeah, dude, my mother watched Everything Ever All at Once, and she
you told me that
it. She liked it too. So it tells you the movie's doing something right.
That's awesome.
And you know, it's fully expected that the next Star Wars movie is going to be announced at Star Wars Celebration in April here in Europe, and you know, we knew Damon Lindelof, creator of Lost, and did the Watchmen series for HBO, was writing a new Star Wars movie. Well, he's now off the project. He turned in his draft for the script, and I guess they're going to work from there. Don't know what this means. I don't know if we'll find out more at Celebration, but all these Star Wars projects that seem to have died, Damon Lindelof's version is still in the works. But Lindelof did make some comments about saying that it's hard. He said, man, he goes, you get sit down, you write it, and you think Star Wars is like, man, I can do this. Star Wars, I grew up watching this. It was the first movie I ever saw in theaters. And he said he sits down, he writes it, and then he realizes, like, man, it's just not what I want it to be. He goes, and if it's not good, people are going to be upset with you. He says it's the hardest thing he's ever had to write. So we'll see how much of Lindelof's version gets used in this apparent possible next Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
A lot of rumors were circulating that it includes characters from the sequels, you know, and people were upset about that, saying they needed to move on. But – you know, it all depends on how the movie is told and how the story is told, you know, if it's in the sequel era. So, you know, so we'll see where they go from there, you know. But, hopefully we know something at Star Wars at Celebration Europe. And the next bit of news I have is Zack Snyder, man, this week was putting out some cryptic images on his Twitter accounts. And it got all the Snyder fanboys going crazy about, oh, what, you know. Come on, did anyone really believe the Snyderverse was going to get continued? I mean, at this point, you know.
On Netflix.
Why would Warner Brothers even sell on Netflix when they own their own streaming service? Think about this.
They're pretty greedy, too.
Yeah, it never made sense. Like, I can't believe people bought that. So you actually bought that by hook, line, sinker?
No. It's, you know, it's water cooler talk.
So he's showing his films. He's calling it SnyderCon in California, April 28th, 29th, 30th. And he's going to have a screening of Man of Steel, a screening of Batman vs. Superman, and a IMAX screening of his Snyder Cut of Justice League. And it's cool because he's also going to sell t-shirts and posters done by Jim Lee. They're going to try to make them available online. They're going to try to have some streaming content with a couple of panels. But the cool thing is it's all for charity. We all know that he lost his daughter to suicide while he was filming Justice League. That's why he had to back out of the project. Yeah. So he came out and said, hey, I wanted to do this. And he's raising money for suicide prevention. And gave people a chance to see his movies. He said he had planned to do this all along. He wanted to have a weekend. He wanted to be more of a theatrical thing where he could have shown all three movies in theaters over a weekend throughout the nation. But he said it turned into a smaller scale version, and he's okay with that. And I think it's a cool thing. I don't know why fans are hating on it. Oh, he's just trying to make money. He's trying to make money for charity. I don't think people actually read the articles what it's for, you know?
Yeah.
And you hear me, they say Jim Lee poster, it's available online, it's not too expensive. I'm going to try to get one. I mean, it's my favorite
definitely.
Artist. You know, so SnyderCon, if you live in California, I think tickets go on sale this Friday, or may already be on sale by the time I hear this episode. So that's a cool thing, I think, you know, see those movies. I mean, SnyderCon, the big screen would be pretty badass. It'd be a long sit, 4 hours.
That would be.
It'd be pretty badass, because I really like that version of the movie, which we just covered a few short weeks ago. So, you know. But that's it for the news, man. All right, well, let's get into today's featured film that literally starts where we left off last week's episode.
Yes.
Which, at the end of John Wick 2, when John is excommunicado'd from the Assassin's League. I don't know. They never really give it a full name.
The Assassin's League. Yeah,
I don't know. From the after killing someone on Continental Hotel grounds. So now he has every assassin in the city after
him. Yep. No more continental breakfast for him.
No. And this movie starts and it doesn't let up. This is literally almost a 2-hour action film of, but the plot's already there. You don't need the plot. You've got some small moments in the plot where John helps, goes to, I guess, his birthright place where that took him in. That seems to, played by Angelica Houston, that seems to form these assassins and they do help him get out of the country and try to get some help. And then there's a couple other small moments, but overall it's just a packed out action film that in the first 20 minutes we have, as much as I said, I like John Wick 2, three, and then the antique weapon shop with the knives and everything is one of the best action sequences in the whole trilogy so far.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a badass sequence. They're throwing knives at each other. And then the one guy still kind of, at the end, is still kind of alive. And he picks up the axe and just hurls it at his head. You're like, holy shit. And it just, and that's how this whole movie is. This is, it's almost as breathless as Mad Max Fury Road is when it comes to action. Just nonstop. I know you and I, we actually saw this one in theaters together.
Yes.
When it came out. And it was quite exhilarating to watch then. And I think, I mentioned last week, I like 2 a little better because of the way it opens up the world and explains things a lot. But when it comes to action, the 3 is pretty, it might have some of the best action sequences.
Oh, definitely. And some very interesting headshots. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, he's okay. He does the pencil. He's using guns. He's using knives. He uses an axe. And then he uses a fucking horse to you know, KO somebody in the head
in the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Yes, all this happens, and I guess this, you just can't throw enough knives at a guy. There's one guy, he just keeps throwing knives at him. Guy's fucking dead, you know, and he's just like, another knife. Ah.
Just what's cool about it is
loading them up.
Stilinski shoots that scene with a knife fight with like cameras like at the end of the hallway, so you can see like the knives coming at you and everything's going on. And I think it's really cool the way he shoots it. And then we meet Sophia, which is played by Halle Berry, which is John has her mark. So she owes him a blood oath to help him, even though she's pissed off at him. It seems like, you know, she's angry. And this movie also has a good sense of dark humor in this, as they continue to like, man, you did all of this because of a dog. It wasn't just a puppy, you know, it's like, and so he meets Sophia and we get another awesome action sequence where she has these fighting dogs that do everything she tells them to do. And there's this just cool ass sequence throughout these buildings in Casablanca where her dogs are attacking people and her and John are going through shooting people. And it's very famously known from the training sequence video that came out when the movie came out showing her and Keanu training for the sequence. And it plays out extremely awesome in the movies. And from what I read, they used real animals too, because they had trained dogs to do the scenes and stuff.
Wow. I didn't realize they used real animals.
Yeah.
But it's very, very well done. And it's funny you mentioned, you know, that we got dogs again. This franchise owes so much to having dogs be the proprietor of the plot in these films. And it's like, you know, I think, you know, John and Hallie are pretty brutal characters that they play. And I think the dogs are just an excuse to get back out there and you know, shed some blood for them. So it's pretty funny. The guy's just, you know, he shoots the dog and the bulletproof vest doesn't hurt him. And she's like, oh, I messed with my dog. And she pulls out her pistol and starts going to town and engages that whole hotel there. And you have a lot of guys in the scene that bring a knife to the gunfight. There's guys coming left and right. And, you know, they're trying to take Hallie and Keanu out with a knife when their characters are clearly orchestrating a death cycle with pistols. You know, and from there, he gets information on how to go get to a man that's above the table. So there's under the table, there's all this under the table, and then now there's a man that sits above the table out in the desert. Sounds like a fairy tale, really, but it works. And this guy's directions that he gives him, where he's just like, yeah, get landed in the desert and walk like 5 billion miles in the sand. And if you make it there alive, you know, there is a man. He meets the guy, and weird table manners this guy in the tent has out in the sand. He's like, okay, but first, cut off your finger. And he has to cut off his fucking finger. Weird.
Yeah, that was weird. Like, why is he in the middle of the desert and all this?
Yeah. And so, you know, and all the meanwhile, you've got an adjudicator, which I don't know why we couldn't have just said judge. We've got to like make it this like 15 million syllable word.
She has her own coin that she hands people, and they're like afraid of it, you know?
Yeah. They're like, the coin, this one. Oh, it's some badass woman here to tell me what to do. And then so everyone's getting their ass kicked. And then, you know, poor Porpheus over in the Bowery. Yeah, Porpheus.
Damn. Dude, pitch burn like that, man.
he's like, you cannot. He has so much fun, I think, playing this Bowery King. He's like, the Bowery. how he talks about his character in the movie. You know, he refuses to clear out, and he gets cut up like a fucking piece of sushi by the Iron Chef guy. A la cuisine. he pulls out his little wakasashi and goes to town on him. You know, I thought about this, that, you know, the big assassin that John Wick takes out at the beginning of the film, the big dude, he's like 8 feet tall. He shoves a book in his mouth and starts pounding it into his face. I wonder if that's the John Wikipedia.
Really? Wow. You got bad jokes tonight.
Dad joke. but yeah, they're going around, they're killing all these people that help John, because no one is above the table except the man above the table. Everyone else is under the table. I think if you did a drinking game and you took a shot every time someone said under the table while watching this film, you'd be fucking drunk, man. You'd blow like a 3.0, because like I think the term under the table is used like 50 times.
I thought about that when I was watching it. Like, once we find out who the high table boss is,
yeah,
like I'm like, man, are we gonna be disappointed? Because everything's under the table, they played it up so much, and you're like, oh, that's it.
Yeah,
I guess we'll find out if they reveal that number four. I don't know. But yeah, you're right though. They keep talking about like no one's above the table, and like, okay, well, who is the table exactly, you know?
Yeah. what is this table? And then they where they decommission the hotel, but I forget what they call it. It's consecrated, yeah. Right? They deconsecrate the hotel. John makes it back, and the owner, the manager of the hotel, is like, all right, John, well, you got me fucked, and so now I'm gonna need your help to fend off this adjudicator's men coming to this hotel or come to wreak havoc on me. And him and Reddick and Lance go and shoot these guys that got badass body armor. I guess they're like the fucking dark troopers of this world. And they've got this armor that's bulletproof unless you shoot in the head like 50 times. So they had to go back and get friggin' shotguns, and they're just exploding dudes' heads. It's bloody as shit. And John Wick is just God mode in this film. He gets hit by more cars, I feel like, in this film than the last one. And he's still getting up. Well, this time he was slower to get up. But man, nothing stops this guy. But there are some, humble moments of him where he is taking damage. Like, so the knife fight, whenever he's back at the hotel, he's fighting the three assassins, and he's taking the kicks to the chest because they're trying to kick and stab at the same time. And he's like, all right, I'm going to take the kick so I can block the stab. And that's all. I feel like, you know, they're trying to make him a little bit more level as much as you can, because he's still John Wick. He's still 50 years old, and he's going to kick your ass. You know, it's just, that's just how it's going to work. And then, you know, after all that, defending the hotel, the adjudicator comes back and basically hints that if John Wick is gone, you know, he does something to John Wick, about John Wick, then, you know, he can have his hotel back. So he freaking shoots him.
Right.
He falls off the top into the street and kicks him to the curb after he used him. While he just sat in the room drinking scotch, and he's like, all right, yeah, thanks for killing all those guys and high-tech body armor for me. Right. You know, I'm just going to...
Well, I think Winston has some sort of plan, you know.
Maybe so. Is he really looking out for himself, or does he have a... Is he still faithful to John? Because John, this whole time, I feel like John is like almost like a son to Winston. Like he really, really cares for John, as much as one can, you know. But yeah, it's weird. It's, you know, he's definitely throwing you through a loop with his actions. You know, is there a plan? Maybe there is, because he does kind of play off the, you know, when she's like, John Wick's gone, he's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Basically, that's cool. It. Yeah.
Then he falls to the ground at the end, and you're thinking, how is John going to survive this? And there's the Bowery King to save him, which I'm like, then my thought was, how did the Bowery King survive 7 cuts? You know, I'm like, I mean, I don't know. I think if I got sliced by a sword 7 times, I'm probably dead.
Yep.
But somehow he survived. And then
he turns to, you know, to Wick, and he's like, do you think that's even air you're breathing?
Yeah.
No, Morpheus joke. I like the Matrix nod in this film. What do you need, John? Guns. Lots of guns.
Yeah. And then does he say something to the Bowery King at the end? Like, I'm going to kill them all or something?
I think so. It's something like that. Something to that effect. And I know we talked about the medallions last week, and how, what goes into the currency? How are they used? What's it worth? Because they're used for so many things. We don't really know the value of them. And you've got this the guy from the other place, the other continental, basically,
right.
Casablanca. He's basically like, yeah, it's just a thing.
Right.
It's like, yeah, this is just a symbol. That's it. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense.
I think it's
gotta be worth something.
I think my only maybe beef with part three is it is action packed and it's exciting, but it's only a little over 2 hours, but yet it feels kind of long. Like, I maybe could have they could have been trimmed a little bit.
Yeah.
By the time you get to the third act, I think that the fight sequences start to kind of almost blend together, and really, like, it's a cool sequence in the Continental where they're trying to fight off all the bad guys, but it's also like, just when you think it's over, it keeps going. And I think when we saw it in theaters, we talked about it afterward for like, those last 20 minutes could have been trimmed down some. I think this movie could have served better for being a little tighter, but it's still pretty badass at the same time, you know?
To me, it's like, you know, picture your favorite candy bar, whether it's a Snickers or a Big Ass. Think of it, but like a deluxe size, like the king size, to where it's like, you know, the first couple bites, you're like, man, this is great. This is sweet. Yeah. Oh, man. And then you keep going and you're still getting the same stuff, but it's just, you're like, man, you know, you're kind of getting numb to it
because
you've had it. Sometimes less is more. Maybe, like you said, they would have tightened it up a little bit, maybe a little bit more explanation, to the world, a little bit more world building. And, you know, maybe it would have kind of been a little bit better regarding that.
It'll be curious to see.
Still good. Yeah.
The fourth one is 2 hours and 40 minutes, you know, that's hitting theaters this weekend. And some of the reviews I have saw said that the first, it does drag a bit in the first half, but then they said the second half of the movie makes up for it so much. So it'll be curious to see how, after coming off part three, which is only just over 2 hours, and I felt was a little draggy towards the end. Well, not so much draggy as more repetitiveness, you know, okay, you know, with so much action in it. To see how a 2-hour, 40-minute action-packed version of John Wick. But they said it's quite epic, part four. And I'm still looking forward to seeing it. Absolutely. I mean, I've really enjoyed this saga so far since it hit theaters a few years ago. And I, like a lot of people, dismiss the first one as just a Keanu Reeves vehicle that, oh, Keanu Reeves made a movie interesting. And then I saw it at home and I was like, wow, that was pretty awesome. And
yeah.
And then saw 2 and 3 in theaters and have enjoyed this series ever since. And I also know they're doing a spinoff called The Ballerina with Ana de Armas. And I didn't realize, I completely forgot about the sequence in this one where he visits the home and there's ballerinas in there. So, you know,
yeah.
And I'm, oh, it makes sense now.
Ana de Armas, baby. I think she can do really good. I like her.
She saw it.
Yeah, man. She's good.
Still
in
trying to figure out how that dress stayed on in No Time to Die.
I know,
action,
man.
Sequence. I'm like, not even possible. You know, but you know, yeah. So I'll be interested. They're doing a Continental spinoff miniseries. I think it's going to be on HBO Max or one of them. It's going to go to, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And so we'll see. You know, they're definitely expanding the world of John Wick. You know, I think there's been some comics out. And there was a video game, I think, out. You know, I never read much about them and how successful they were, but it's definitely a action franchise that came out of nowhere, and it's probably the preeminent action franchise of current modern times. You know, I mean, you had Die Hard in the 80s and 90s, and you know, you had the Matrix films in the 90s, and now here's Keanu again. You know, he did the Matrix films, and now this, and another huge action franchise, and being very successful with it. And I think part four will do very well. I think people will go to the theaters to see this, and you know, theaters are slowly coming back. They're not dead. They're coming back. There's been some hugely successful movies in the last year with Avatar and Top Gun.
Oh yeah.
And some other successful films. And I think John Wick.
You have billion dollar movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
John Wick's going to do well. You know, Guardians 3 is coming out. I think it'll, despite Marvel's issues lately, I think Guardians 3 will do well, as it's a popular franchise. And Indiana Jones this summer and The Flash. And I feel like John Wick might be the kickoff to a good year of movies in 2023. You know, I just get that feeling that that's the way we're headed.
Yeah. You know?
And I've enjoyed this franchise, and I'm just looking to for part four to answer more questions about the high table.
Yeah.
And why is everyone under it? And say goodbye to Lance Reddick and his final film performance, and also enjoy some just kick-ass action from the boogeyman, from John Wick himself.
Yep. The boogeyman, the man that makes every other man shit his pants.
Pretty much. You know, he kills him with a fucking pencil.
A fucking pencil.
All right. Man, before we get out of here, we've got one more episode before our April theme month. And we had not officially announced our April theme month. You know, we've done various theme months. We did comedies a couple years ago against my chagrin. And then last year the comedy year?
Yeah, last year was a comedy year. Three Amigos.
A couple years ago, we did Crime Pays Month, where we did all crime movies. And
L.A. Confidential.
And this year, we are going to do comic book movies that just – we don't really have an official title for it, but it's going to be like comic book movies that just didn't quite work. And so we're gonna go back and we're going to revisit some of those, including Spawn and Daredevil and Green Lantern and what was the fourth one I said? X-Men The Last Stand. So those will be our April theme month movies, as we look at some comic book movies that just did not quite succeed the way they could have. But before we get there, we have a movie we're going to do next week, as Major League Baseball is kicking off their season. And every now and then we do a sports movie. We get a hankering for it. You know, we've done Friday Night Lights and Field of Dreams. And this is a fan request from whenever we put out on our Facebook page. And a friend of the show, Tracy, requested us do this movie. So we're going to talk next week, film 8 Men Out.
Edward Seacott, Joseph Jefferson Jackson, Arnold Gandil, Charles Risberg, Oscar Felch, Claude Williams, and George Weaver are hereby accused of conspiracy to commit a confidence game.
We're gonna see the Sox!
Baseball, 1919. There were no free agents, no million-dollar salaries, but there was a team no one could beat. The true story of the team they called the Black Sox and the scandal that broke the heart of a nation.
Any bet against my Sox this series is a sucker bet.
You can find seven men on the best club willing to throw the World Series?
Come on, Joe! Shoeless Joe ain't in.
I ain't. You want me?
You don't want to be stupid, do you, Joe?
Now you just sign your name right there, Joe.
I made an agreement with those guys.
A couple of Boy Scouts here, they made a deal.
The players are in now. What are they going to do, call a cop?
What you got it off for, Eddie?
Eddie can dump three games all on his own.
We don't get Eddie, we forget about him.
How many games does Mr. Seacott win for us this year?
29, sir.
You said if I won 30 games, there'd be a $10,000 bonus.
29 is not 30, Eddie.
I'm going to make the play. I don't feel right.
You can't welch on these guys.
Shut up! I know what you're doing!
They were an American dream come true, the best that ever were. Nine men took the field, but when the game was over, there were eight men out.
What do you think of these players of yours now, Mr. Gleason?
I think they're the greatest ball club I ever seen, period.
Don't you forget it. Eight Men Out, written for the screen and directed by John Sayles.
And for people that don't know, this is the story of the Black Sox scandal from the 1900s when the White Sox were accused of throwing the World Series and several of the players were banned from baseball for life, including one of the greatest hitters of all time, Shoeless Joe Jackson, who maintained his innocence until his death that he did not cheat in the World Series. And we'll talk about all that next week and look back at Eight Men Out. It's been a while since I've seen this movie. I know it's a good film. It's a good sports movie, and it'll be fun to rewatch. It's out there on Tubi and Pluto, some of those free platforms, so it's pretty easy access to watch it. And that's what we will discuss next week on the show is 8 Men Out here on the Rebel Radio Podcast.
Man, but, I've never seen that film, 1988.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, it's highly rated.
Yeah. Yeah. It'll be a good watch, and we'll look at the history of the Black Sox and or the White Sox and that through the World Series and take a look at that as we get ready to kick off the 2023 Major League Baseball season throughout the United States and Canada. And our Astros hopefully defending a World Series title and maybe going back. We'll see.
That's right, baby.
A long grind, so we'll see what happens. But until then, you can go to RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs, as always. And you can find us on all the apps, you know, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple iPodcasts, all that good stuff. And join that Facebook group that we have a link up to there so you can make movie requests, and we'll try to get to them. But don't request Debbie Does Dallas because we're probably not going to do that.
Yeah.
Or Steel Magnolias. You know, I'm not watching. Or fucking
Driving Miss Daisy.
Fault of My Stars or whatever. The Notebook.
Yeah, The Notebook.
Fucking movies. yeah, so. But that's it, man. Until next time, thank you as always for listening. And remember, as always, just go
there.
This has been Mark.
Horsley. This has been Matt. Yeah.
We got to say our names. People know who we are. Yeah. Remember, as always, just go there.
Just go there and do it.